Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women and men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to send to me, please email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's B-O-N-K-A-Y-E at AOL.com. And I'll be happy to respond. And if you listen to the show afterwards and would like to address anything to my guest, let me know, and I'll be happy to pass the information on to him. So tonight, without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to a very special guest we're having, Mike from Linked Investigations in California. Mike, welcome back. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Well, hello, Bonnie. Thank you. And it's a pleasure to be back and to talk to you again.
Every time you're here, Mike, you know, you're kind enough to join us every year. So many people write back to me how helpful the information is that you give up for, the, you know, for them. And I think that's because so many times people have such a hard time accepting the situation that their husbands could be gay. And people are always saying to me, or sending letters, I get them every week. You know, I need proof. I need proof. So can you address that a little bit?
Sure. Everyone has a different reason for why they need proof. I get it. Sometimes they need it for their own gut instinct to be able to motivate them to go in a specific direction that proof they need to be able to do that. Sometimes they need it for religious purposes, to show to family and friends. They need proof for different reasons. And that's fine. But I think that there should be a realistic expectation of what you're going to get in the way of proof, and how much of your energy and your your soul can you spare to spend on this, and your money, very importantly, because it can get very expensive. And, you know, I've had people, and just like you, and we've talked before, and some people seem to get kind of stuck in this mire, in this rut, where they become like obsessive, and they're living in this life of trying to figure out how is it happening, or when is it happening, and what's going on, okay. And then the self-reflection, it just goes on and on. So I think the biggest thing initially would be you've got to be able to put things in perspective if possible, and keep it to a limit.
So what would be, for instance, some perspective on this? Let's say a woman would come to you and she would say to you, I don't know, I need proof. I need proof that my husband's cheating on me with a man. You know, and he keeps, you know, first he says maybe, and then he says no way, or you're imagining it. I never said that, or maybe I'm bisexual, but that doesn't mean I'm actually acting on it. At what point do you say enough is enough?
Well, so there's a couple of different ways to look at that. You know, I ask people, how miserable are you in your situation? Are there other things in your situation, in your marriage, it's just not acceptable? You shouldn't have to have a need to prove this if everything else in the relationship is soured, the wheels have fallen off, and you should probably leave and go enjoy your life elsewhere. And there's a whole, you know, there's a lot to that. But I point specific details out to prospective clients and people that just call to get some advice, and to clients all the time. As far as the times when someone wants to catch them or they feel they need to catch them, we do that. You know, we do that all the time. And sometimes it's not practical because it's too random and there's not a real pattern that you can put your finger on. So it would be very difficult. But a lot of times there are patterns, and a lot of women take their husband's word for, like, scheduling things. I'm playing golf, or I do this, or I'm at the gym, and they assume that those occasions are not of concern. And we find a lot of times, well, they don't go to their class sometimes. They don't go to the gym sometimes, or they never go to the gym. Or they make a pit stop before or after the gym, or the golf club, or the tennis, or the pickleball thing, or whatever it is that they do. A lot of times they add in this extracurricular activity, and that's one way that you can catch them. But you know, so you can schedule different ways to try to catch someone actually meeting up with someone else. They'll still deny it. And that's another thing. Unless you've got some pretty hard evidence, a few different occasions where you really see this pattern, the person can still just deny it and still say that you're crazy, and they might as well do the whatever it is you're accusing them of because you don't trust them anyway. All the cliched things that we've heard all the time, so many times.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest mistake people make in these situations is they argue about it. They threaten they're going to hire a private investigator. They threaten divorce. They threaten things with custody. They telegraph what they're thinking, and that's a gigantic mistake. I mean, you don't do that in any circumstance that you want to have an upper hand or do well in. I mean, you just don't do things like that. So I have to admonish my clients all the time, please do not argue with him about this. Don't tell him what you're going to do. If we find some things out, don't throw it in his face, maybe ever, because that knowledge is the powerful thing. What you do with it is very important, and you can squander some would-be fantastic information and negotiation tools. And I mean, if you're in a no-fault state and things like this don't matter in the courtroom, they can still matter outside of the courtroom. But it's how you present that, how you package that, how prepared you are. I've had to tell so many of my clients, because they say, I don't know if I can keep it to myself. I'm so upset, and I'm going to have to live a lie for a few weeks until I get my attorney straight and I get all the documentation ready, and so I'm kind of their confidant and cheerleader for a while behind the scenes. So they can get through that part of it. And I say, you know what, if you break down and you're crying and you're afraid that they're going to figure something's up, make up a story. Your girlfriend's brother, someone that they don't know, was hurt in an accident, or somebody's sick, and give a different reason for your being upset, just to get through those moments that are so difficult. But there's just so much that can be discussed when it comes to this, and I think you and I have talked about it before, but I'm not a hard salesperson. Actually, I think I talk more people out of hiring a private investigator. I tell them to save that money and use it for a good certified specialist in family law, an attorney, or whatever their situation is. A lot of times we're a great fit. A lot of times there's no need for us. I mean, some people have been physically and mentally abused, and they need proof of an affair. And so I don't get that. You don't need proof of an affair. You've already had all these other history. Usually there's a history of previous affairs. And to try to give another excuse and procrastinate that you're trying to get proof now, it doesn't really make a lot of sense to me. Sometimes we get through that part of it, and when they're because everyone's got different reasons, like I said. So if they do need to try to get proof, I usually take baby steps. I say, all right, let's do like a 4-hour minimum, and we'll check this occasion. Or if they're going out of town, we can check on that. Here's what that would cost. Here's what that would look like. Here's what you can expect. You're not going to ever get, unless it's just, some dumb luck thing just happens, you're not going to get video or pictures of them engaging in any kind of act with another person. You may get some small public display of affection if they greet each other in a parking lot or at a restaurant, or if they're, little public things, but you're not going to get them in a hotel room. You don't go bursting through the door and, snap pictures of somebody doing something in a hotel room. That's not realistic. That doesn't happen. But
I think you have
you
to
can
put
get
all
things
the pieces
that are
together that you have to accept the fact you may not walk in on. If your proof has to be, I have to see it with my own eyes, your chances of finding that are very slim. Because unless you're going to really follow somebody, stand in the hotel where, they're going, stand by the door, knock on the door, and pretend you're having your room service, the chances are it's just not going to happen. Of course, you can hire a service like Mike's, and they can do that for you, right?
Yes and no. So there are still limitations. So if we were to go, so we see people going to hotels and restaurants and having sex in the cars and all these things. I mean, one of my guys just had that video of two men doing it in the car. So that was pretty obvious evidence. You don't usually get that level of evidence in situations like this, though. And in that particular instance, that might be something that can be used out of court to say, don't make this difficult because we don't need all this to come out, that kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about catching them in the act, so it doesn't matter if you're their spouse or if you're a private investigator. If you go to the hotel room door and you knock on the door, they're probably going to be very careful if they even open the door. If you have a confrontation or if you start yelling and making a scene, you're probably going to go to jail. We've had clients that call us and they find them in the, we've done surveillance. We've caught the person numerous times in affairs, and the client, they're in therapy, and, half the time that's a sham. They lie to the therapist. They need their space. They're working on things. And so people just hope just for the sake of hope itself. It's such a waste of your quality of life. And I think if something's really not good, you shouldn't hang everything on, I need proof. How about I'm not happy and you're not doing it for me anymore and I think I'm done with you?
Absolutely.
Rather than trying to,
what I tell women
rather than trying to catch somebody. Yeah.
Right. I would say that every day you lose every day you lose marriage to a gay man is a day of your life you're never going to get back. But I would say that for any relationship, every day you're in a bad relationship, you're never getting that day back. And you can, no matter what you do, you've lost it. And days turn into weeks, weeks turn into years, and so on. And people waste years of their life knowing that they're not happy. And to me, being happy is what it's all about. If you're not happy in a relationship, then that relationship's not the relationship for you. And I don't know what kind of proof you need that you're not happy. You know you're not happy, but you don't
have to
feel obligated to prove why you're not happy. I mean, if someone's not doing the right thing by you. And with these men, I mean, obviously they're living a lie every day of their life because they're gay and they're pretending they're straight. So it's not like they don't have a lot of experience in living a lie. They're living it daily,
right. And
so to lie to you means nothing. They've been lying to you from the time they married you. And I'm not saying that all gay men go into these marriages purposely lying. I know that many of them do the best they can to love their wives when they marry them, and they are hoping against hope that marriage is going to change everything around and make them not gay anymore. But it doesn't work. And once you realize it doesn't work, you have that obligation to tell your wife, I tried my best, I'm really sorry, I didn't realize this was going to happen, rather than spend years torturing her, making her think that she's the one who's at fault. I think some of our women really lose perspective, Mike, because I've seen some of our women are model quality gorgeous. And the fact that they have to be sexually rejected, they lose total perspective of what it's like, you know, to be a totally gorgeous woman in our society who men come after. But when that one man rejects them, they personalize and feel everything's their fault because these men know how to turn the tide on you and make you think it's your fault, right?
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, that's an interesting point because I've made that observation in the years I've been doing this. A lot of these couples that are like the Barbie and Ken couples, these guys are gay. You know, they're so hyper focused on themselves. And then when they're not gay, it's the same. They're still so focused on themselves. They're so into themselves. They don't have time to give anybody else that much attention. It's, you know, they're so concerned about their appearance and their outward appearance and on and on and on. Now that might not seem to be a priority for a time, but pretty soon it starts to become commonplace. And you notice, you know, when somebody actually changes and they kind of make a decision that they're just going to indulge themselves in their behavior, that's when they, you know, change. They have a transformation. They, you know, they lose weight. They start exercising. They change their grooming. They change the way they dress. They start treating you a lot worse. A lot of these guys are horrible to their wives, and the wives are so, their feelings are so hurt by this, and it really, it's upsetting to even see these great people go through this when you wish you could just say, hey, come on, get out of this. Let's go. You know, there's so many people that would appreciate you, and you don't believe it, but you have to get out of this toxic situation and move on to a better one. I mean, even the fear of being alone, being alone is better than being with someone who's lying and deceiving you and making you feel like you're less than. I mean, that's worse than being alone. But if anybody doesn't want to be alone, then they're not going to be alone. They shouldn't dwell on that.
I think, you know, also,
fear.
When you live with somebody who's so degrading to you and who tries to rip away every kind of esteem you might have, your self-esteem, your sexual esteem, your emotional esteem, you know, day by day, gaslighting you, I call it gaylighting in this case, but making you think you're the one that's at fault, you're the one who's crazy, you're imagining it. In time, you just lose who you are. You know, you're not the same person. I think so many of our women went through what I went through, but I didn't even know who I was anymore. I was like, I called myself a dish rag because I couldn't make any decisions. No matter what decision I made, I was knocked down that it wasn't good enough or I wasn't doing enough or I wasn't, you know, cleaning the house enough or whatever the case is. There was constant criticism. And so after a while, you start buying into this when you hear it on a daily basis. And I think that's a really important concept that if love, you know, one time I had a, you know, guest who was part of our group and she had tattooed on her hands, love is kind. And that kind of put it all in perspective for me, that love is kind. That's what love is supposed to be about. And if somebody is mean
right,
to you,
you're good to somebody.
Right?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, there's a problem there that you have to recognize that this isn't what marriage or a relationship is supposed to be about. It's supposed to be somebody making you feel good on a daily basis. Look, we all have good days and bad days, but with love, you know, that conquers should be conquering everything, and you should always feel good in love. And when you start feeling degraded or, you know, put down or, you know, then that's the time you have to really consider why am I putting up with this? You know, love doesn't conquer everything.
Bonnie, do you think that, just off the top of your head, what's the percentage of people that you talk with that are fixated on needing to get proof of a gay relationship?
I would say about half.
About half.
Some people are fine just looking at all the signs. They put them all together. They see the slow deterioration of the marriage or the quicker deterioration. I'm going to ask you this. You're a straight male, so maybe you can just confirm this, but when you're a straight man and you have a woman that you love, isn't that somebody who sexually you want to be with? I mean, that's how straight men look at women, right? Not how
well,
can I get
I
away from
I think there's
them.
Differences. In all honesty, I always was more objectifying. I hate to have to admit. I've been in love several times, but if I'm very attracted, it can be on different levels, not just physical, but it can be, you know, somebody that you really are comfortable in conversation with and you really seem to click and there's a real building there and an attraction. And then there's the physical attraction. And I think that people can have both or more of one and then the other. There's not really a perfect equation for that. But, yeah, I think that you can love someone and there's could be some other issues where you're not, and I think that's not with the person who's being rejected. I think the somebody who's doing the rejecting, they're the one that has the issues that they need to work on. The problem is most people don't realize it. They can't self-analyze that way. It's too scary for them to look at that. And
well, they personalize it because they're being told it's their fault to start with. How many women in my group, which is almost all of them, at one point or another have been told by their husbands, you're too fat, you're too thin, you smell, you have bad breath, no man's going to want you, you're too flat-chested, you're too full-chested. I mean,
yeah,
I
to me, none of that's acceptable.
What they're telling their wives.
That's so hateful. I've never said things like that to any woman in my life. And, you know, I mean, if it's a stranger and you're angry, I don't think I've said something like that. But a relationship, I mean, you know, the person that you're in a relationship with, it's supposed to be your partner. It's supposed to be good, all positive. I know things can happen. People can get angry. You can have arguments. Things can be said that people regret and don't mean and all this. But there's a limit to that, first of all. But also if it's commonplace or someone just is doesn't treat you with respect and isn't kind, to use your word, which is spot on, then there's something else that's wrong. And, you know, think about it when we were all younger, when we were like high school age and college age, and there was people interested and we were looking around and we were interested in people. If someone that you met treated you like that, if you had any modicum of self-respect, you would kick them to the curb. You wouldn't have anything to do with them. You'd tell your girlfriends what a heel the guy was and what he did. And now people are married to someone who behaves that way. And that's because the relationship's changed, or like you say, in a gay man to a straight woman situation, it's almost like a boiling over point, and it usually gets a lot worse and because they can't continue to live the lie. And we've discussed that too. There's different scenarios, but I see that a lot. By the time people call me, they're telling me these scenarios, how things have just completely changed. There was always some little hints here and there, and now it's out of control. The guy's treating them horribly. He says, you look disgusting in those pants. You know, you're fat. And meanwhile, the guy's out, you know, making it with another guy after 30 years of marriage. I mean, hello. But he's the one that's going to be calling him out and saying all this hateful stuff. And it's just such a toxic waste of time. And the sun is so shiny on the other side of that. You just
Yeah,
you
don't
tell
them
what you're going to do. You do your homework and you get out of it. You leave that marriage.
You know, one of the things I think it's hard for women to do, but I think you'll agree with this. When you're trying to put everything in place and trying to get evidence against your husband, you can't be telling him, I'm going to find out what you're doing. I'm going to check this.
No.
I'm going to check that. You have to just stay back and not make him suspicious that you're checking anything, right?
Right. You're supposed to act like everything. Just let the recent things that have boiled over and the big deal that's going on, you need to take a step back and act like you've just kind of let it go again. But don't let it go. Do your homework. Don't leave the phone book going. I don't think they're using phone books anymore. Don't leave any business cards or anything, your browser history where you've been visiting law firms and or PIs or any of these things. Don't do things like that. Don't make any threats. Don't tell them what you're going to do. Just do it. And I'd be happy to. If anybody wants to call me and get some kind of an outline of a thing, you know, a direction to go, if they want to go through that process or consider it, I don't charge for that. I'm not going to try to hook somebody. I've just done it so many times, and I've seen how it works when you plan it well, and I've gotten the great reports back from clients that are just thrilled that they did it this way. There's a positive way that you can go through this and come out as good as you can.
Mike, can you talk a little bit about the forensic background checks that you do?
Women sure.
Want to know how
So if we're looking at if the marriage has significant assets, if we think that they have trade accounts, brokerage house accounts, there's searches for that. A lot of people lie about that, of course, especially in these situations. The same thing with bank accounts that aren't disclosed. There can be bank accounts that you're not aware of. They might have more than one account even at the same bank. So there's searches for that too. You can't, in my state, and I believe it's across the board, you can't get transactional history anymore. That's off limits. But we can still get some very valuable information. We can find the name of the bank. We can find the branch office address where an account was opened. We can find the current reported balance in checking and or savings and the amount of the most recent transaction and what type of transaction, deposit or withdrawal. And that includes for, like I say, brokerage house investment accounts and banks. Those are two separate searches. They're not inexpensive. They take 14 business days for our vendor to get the results back to me. So that's like three weeks, you know, calendar days. And then, of course, we do background checks. We can find derogatory information, civil and criminal records. Once again, people, some couples, they know everything about the other person. They're comfortable that there's no surprises around the corner. Some people are mistaken, and there are, and that's usually fairly obvious when you talk to them. And then some people don't know anything at all about their spouse and their secret life. So they want to do some of these things and see if they've got an apartment somewhere that's of record to them or another property or if they're still on the mortgage for their house or if they've been removed illegally with somebody who did the notary work illegally. That happens all the time. So there's all different things. You can find criminal records and civil records, and that can be very helpful. Some situations warrant doing these types of searches. Some situations it's not so important. Going back to the bank and the brokerage searches, unless we're talking a pretty significant amount of money, I'd say at least into the six figures, I don't know that you would want to do those types of searches. Perhaps for banks, maybe a little lower number than that. But some marriages, you know, there's you know, a couple $1 million in assets. That, to me, if it's that amount or higher, then I think it's a no-brainer. You do those things because it's just like doing your due diligence. You want to see if there's anything there. Make sure you're well-informed. Once again, you never discuss this with your mate. You discuss this with your attorney, and you have a game plan. And these are things, like I'm saying, that I would be happy give some ideas to people if they need some of that. Once you have a direction and you have a plan, you start to feel better. Once you sit down with an attorney who explains to you what to expect, what's realistic, what's not realistic, your spouse doesn't know that you're doing this, and it's not illegal. You're not violating some trust. I mean, that's out the window anyway, if you want to analyze that. But you once you leave that office, you feel so empowered. You feel so much better because now you've got an advocate for your cause. And you can quietly go through that. They'll give you a list of things they need you to do. You can take care of all that before anything's come up. And you know what's funny? I've seen so many times. So a woman will get everything done. It takes a couple, 3 weeks before she gets all the paperwork and everything over to an attorney to get everything ready to go. And then it comes time to serve divorce papers. And I'm not trying to push people down to get a divorce. I just don't think people should waste their lives in a unhealthy marriage. So it's, those things are obviously very closely related. But so the guys are usually so demeaning and they're so insulting to these women, and they think the women are so stupid, or they try to manipulate them by telling them these things. Very successful women get very weak when it comes to their man who treats them this way. They're only with that person that way. He's the only guy that can get away with that garbage with them, but it works. So they serve them. They catch him off guard. He has time to look at it. He goes and gets his own attorney. And his attorney tells him he's screwed. Yeah, she's got you. There's nothing you can hide. Everything's here. If you try to falsify records, which they do all the time, you've already got copies of the original, so somebody's going to get in trouble if they submit that stuff. So you do all this. So the guy comes in on his knees crying. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'll change. You know, we can make this work. Don't do this. This is not – you know, stop. And they, you know, it's just awful, crocodile tears. And of course the woman's sympathetic to that. She would love to have had a great situation. So there's a pretty significant percentage of women that will cancel the divorce. They'll think they're going to work on it again. And usually within six months, the guy is much worse. Now he's prepared. You've already crossed the line, but he beat you at that round of the game. And usually it's even uglier than it was. So now you've lost that advantage. He's been able to sell off things, transfer stuff, everything, because there was no divorce. You're not allowed to do that if there's a divorce that's been filed. It stops everything. And so they get the upper hand against you when you had it. It was right there. And you can still have an amicable divorce, best it can be expected. You can still be civil with each other later on. There's going to be a dust-up, obviously, in the beginning because it's an emotional thing in the beginning. But being well-prepared is everything, and keeping your mouth shut is everything. I can't stress that enough.
Yeah, they go get their lawyers. You know, when you give any hints that this is going to be the end, you know, they look to protect themselves. And some of these guys, I don't know the ones you're working with, I'll be honest with you, some of these men are so friggin' controlling. It's like they just can't let the marriage end, even though they've done everything wrong, even though they've been caught in the act, even though, you know, they leave, but they want control. They still want control.
Right, and it's for optics. Yeah, they love having to have the wife over here, and they love being the naughty little guy over there at the park, you know, three times a week, finding some, you know, young guy. Just, there's all different situations, and we've seen them so many times. I mean, since the time that you and I met and started doing these together, there's had to have been hundreds of marriages between a gay man and a straight woman that we've worked on. It seems like it's like half the time. That's what's going on. It's unbelievable.
And some of them, like I say, have no mercy. You know, they'll try to get you for everything, even though you've been married 20, 30 years of your life and been stripped down to nothingness for all those years. You know, now that you've finally been caught and, you know, she says this is it, it's never going to be it because there's children that they're going to fight over. Some of these guys are
the worst.
They're
so angry.
They want to try to get you. So controlling
and so angry. Yep. But being prepared and having a good lawyer And, you know, I usually give people two or three family law attorneys to go visit. And you don't tell them that you're shopping attorneys because, you know, they're prideful. They don't want to think that you're just going to go to the next one. So you just go in, sit down, go over everything, be prepared for that consultation, and then tell them you've got to discuss it with mom or sister or somebody like that, and then have another one. Unless you just fall in love with the attorney, you think they really get it and you're happy with them, then fine. But it's never a bad idea to get at least, just like anything, like with contractors or anything, you get, you know, two or three meetings, consultations with these people to see who stands out. So, but you do that and you get prepared, and that'll get you some respect when it comes.
I just want to mention to you, when you're finding an attorney, that could be another whole show. But I one time had one of our support group members who needed an attorney, and she went to the consultation for the attorney. You know, she paid for the consultation, and he didn't seem very positive towards her, but she said, okay, she'll go back and meet with him again, you know, and spend a lot of money with him. And she says, I don't know why. He just doesn't seem like he really gets my situation or understands it. So I did a little digging myself and, you know, did a research on him. And it turned out he's like on the board of these LGBTQ, you know, on boards. So, yeah.
Wow.
You really have to know who your attorney is, because then she'd stop going to him right away. And that was the problem. They're not going to be sympathetic to your cause. You know, a lot of lawyers don't understand this whole situation and the dynamics. And when you're living in a state, which many are, of no-fault divorce, it makes it really difficult. You know, that's one of the things I've been fighting against for many, many years. There should be fault divorce. When somebody's doing this to you, there is fault. And you should be, you know, not have to go through all of this. It's not your fault that your husband is gay. You know, that has nothing to do with why the marriage, you know, you went into a marriage knowingly. It doesn't work that way. Why should you be held, like, you know, no fault when there is fault? But I don't know. How about in California? Is it all no fault there?
It's no fault. They don't, not only do they not care, they don't even want to hear it. It's, it's just you file it, and then 6 months later, you're divorced. And then all of the other issues can be argued. So if it's financial, property, custody, most of the work that I'm finding myself doing nowadays is custody related, enforcement of court orders. We're not enforcing. We're looking for violations of court orders. Usually, you can't drink, 12 or 24 hours before or any time during your visitation with the minor children or child. And people that have issues, they don't care what the court says, so they're going to do that anyway. And a lot of these custody battles aren't fought for the right reason in the first place. They're not fought because somebody loves the children and they want the children to have a better life and they feel they can give them a better life. It's because they don't want to spend the money and give you more money because you've got more custody. And the courts usually know that. It's new to the person who's never been through it before, but you can imagine these attorneys that have done thousands and thousands of divorces in the courts, and people like me, private investigators who work with clients on all different levels. Sometimes we just do the work and turn it in. Other times we do some hand-holding and help them more through the process. It depends on the situation. But we see it from a different perspective, and so that's why it's so helpful for somebody to go have a consultation with a family law attorney. Because all these questions that you're running around in this circular argument with yourself over are a waste of your time. And you can go find out what time it is from a good attorney. And if for some reason you think you may or may not need a PI, it doesn't hurt to call. But, you know, there's a lot of rats in my business too. So be careful that, you know, someone's not just trying to get you to pour a bunch of money on them so they can do all this surveillance. And, you know, they support a lot of the things that are not really necessary for you to do. And in my opinion, you know, we work for our money. And in a lot of these divorces, there's really tight purse strings. The controlling guy keeps you on an allowance in a lot of situations. Sometimes it's very difficult. So you've got to go to a friend or a family member to help you temporarily get through this part of it. I mean, I see that all the time. And I get it, and you've got to be careful. So if there's money taken out and somebody's watching that like a hawk, that they don't figure out that you're up to something. So there's ways to do it, and it's not that hard. It's just scary, and once you're in it, you're like, oh, I can't believe I waited so long. It's not that big a deal. And can you imagine how nice it would be on that when the day comes when that person is no longer your problem? You don't care if they're a liar or if they're honest because they're not in your life anymore. For the most part, if you've got shared custody, okay, you have to deal with them a little bit. But it's not like you're going to be living in the same house and depending on their integrity and whether or not they love you. You'd be surprised how many people would be so happy to find someone that they can love, that can love them back. And, you know, the person that was the abuser in these situations usually shrinks and goes back into their snail shell and moves on down the road in their life. I mean, it's you bring a good man on board, things will change. That'll be a game changer too.
Yeah, it's either bring a good man on board or just be happy with yourself, learn to learn who you are and why you stayed in the situation for so damn long. You know, so many times women just afraid to give up, give in, and so you say, you're wasting years of your life where you could have happiness. And I think that sometimes when you're just so knocked down, you have, you know, a tendency to be codependent because you're being told that you can never make it on your own. Nobody's ever going to want you. You know, you get these messages
and you believe
every
it.
Day, right?
That's right. It's like brainwashing. Yeah, you'll believe it. And so even if you feel that is the case, you owe it to yourself to still look into a couple of these things because it might help you see it through a different lens. It might give you a different perspective. And it's worth a try. I mean, a lot of these attorneys don't charge for a consultation. Some of them do, but if they do, it would be money well spent. And, you know, people in my business don't usually charge for a consultation. You know, those are sources of advertising, right? Free consultation, you know.
Well, Mike, you know, he's in California. He has a lot of contacts throughout the country, right, Mike?
I have some. Yeah, I've kind of I don't like to refer things out as much as I once did. I had pretty good working relationships in different states, but as a PI, and we've got our name is on the line too, I don't want to just give somebody to a PI that I don't really know really well. And a lot of the guys that I know are now retired or they're no longer with us. I still know some great PIs in different states that I work with here and abroad. As you know, I just got back Friday night from being out of state on an assignment, and that took us to a couple of different states. But
as far as like a forensic investigation, you could do that from there, right?
Yeah, any of the computer-based research we do from here, it's
right.
All national, so it doesn't matter where I'm located. It doesn't matter where your PI is located. So yeah, and then the only real reason that you would need someone local or to bring someone in would be for, you know, like if you need surveillance or if you need somebody to talk to witnesses or something like that, depending on what the case is about. Then you would want someone either in your area or you'd have to import someone. And then we'd have to make sure it's legal for us to go to, you know, a lot of states don't like PIs coming into their state because it's taking business away from the people they have. But a lot of places, you know, there's not a lot of talent out there. There's some great talent, but you've got to be able to find it. And everyone says
they're the best.
So I can
help you find it. So I just want to say that in closing, because we're at the end of our time, on this broadcast, you know, you'll see LinkedIn, you know, lit up in orange. So if you want to get in touch with Mike, just click into that link, and it will take you right to his website. And he's more than happy to talk to you and advise you or help you, depending on what your situation is. And, Mike, I can't thank you enough. This means so much to so many of our women who listen to you and who love listening to you, you know, because of all the information that you give. And I'm so happy that
I appreciate it. And, yeah.
And
thank you for that. And
again in about 6 months.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
I
do it because I'm passionate about it. I don't like it when people do other people wrong. And this is a big deal, and I just don't like it, and that motivates me. I like to help people get through these times so they can go have some fun on a cruise or something.
Yeah.
Put it in
perspective. All right, guys, don't hesitate. Click into Mike's link, and if you need any other help, write to me at bombk@aol.com. Mike, thank you so much. I love you. You're the best. You really are. I really appreciate this.
Thank you, Bonnie. You too.
All right. Yep. I'll be talking to you soon.
You.
All right. Take care.
Okay.
Good night, everyone.